Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Now, I know I did some moaning about the slovenly teenage bathroom behaviour last week, but I've got some more. This time, the area of the house is the stairs.
Right. What are they doing on the stairs?
Dropping
things.
Food crumbs, food trails, popcorn and chocolate digestive biscuits, lumps of found.
Ooh, nice.
On the stairs up to the bedrooms.
Nice to be trodden into the carpet, rounding.
I mean, honestly, it's not Hansel and Gretel. We're not leaving a breadcrumb trail to be, you know, to be rescued or anything from the bedrooms. It's just, I don't know.
Mine always say, oh, our dog, oh, she's obsessed with me, the dog. She loves me. And I say, you're just a walking food dropping thing. She's just following you around for all of the extra treats that she gets on. So no wonder she's a bit porky, quite frankly.
Well, do you know what? Our dog's not allowed upstairs. And that's probably why the ground floor is immaculate. And everything from the stairs upwards she's not getting to. So maybe I need a change of pets on the first floor policy.
Or a change of teens, Trish.
Yeah, that could do. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy, and we're on a mission to help you make the most of your magnificent midlife. We'll be tackling everything from mind and body wellness to HRT and your sex drive. Trish and I are here to help you have a stylish second act and answer all your midlife questions on fashion, beauty, careers, relationships, family, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens.
We have some good news and bad news for you all today. The good news is that this is the last episode of the season, and the bad news is that we'll be back again in January for more postcards from midlife shenanigans.
You've been on those dry martinis again, Trish.
Well, always.
You've got that the wrong way round, haven't you? I am sure the women of Britain are going to be devastated to hear that this is the last episode, 2021. They're not going to be thinking it's good news. I mean, we're a potentially award-winning broadcasters, Trish.
Potentially one day. But no, actually, you are right. And I'm pleased that you picked that up, because I was actually checking if you were listening and paying attention properly, as I know you can drift off into your world of fantasy celebrity friends and working out your next name drop when I'm talking. So I wanted to just check you were listening to me, Lorraine.
This is true. I am working out my next name drop. Wait for it. It's coming up later. But yes, I hang on your every word, actually, Trish, my little friend. Seriously, though, we have come to the end of season four, which is rather dramatic, isn't it? And today we're going to be reflecting on all our favourite things that we've learned on the podcast 2021, as well as all the brilliant women we've interviewed along the way. And we're going to jibber jabber about that, aren't we, shortly?
Yes, we did give everyone a heads up on last week's episode, which prompted Jane from far, far away in Vancouver to get in touch via email saying, I'm recalling you did a very funny Christmas episode last year with just the two of you. I wonder if you're planning to do another. I'm sure I would enjoy listening to it.
I think you might be quite generous with that description. Very funny Christmas episode. We won't disappoint you. We are coming back. The menopausal Morecambe and Wise will be doing a Christmas special. This will be out in December. We're actually going to make history on this one, aren't we, Tris? We're going to have not one, but two guests, which means that in one room, there'll be four middle-aged women on one chart-topping podcast broadcasting. Now, this is a kind of first, isn't it? I think, I wonder if the universe might reject it and that we might affect the space-time continuum like Doctor Who or something. You can't have four middle-aged women on one show.
I think
never happened before.
We should call Guinness Book of Records right now because we're very excited, aren't we? Because we're going to be joined by another pair of podcasting pioneers, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover from the fantastic Fortunately podcast.
It's what you call in children's television terms a mashup.
Yes.
It's a mashup of Postcards, unfortunately. Well, you have failed to mention that they are actually proper broadcasters. They're BBC veterans and broadcasting professionals. So we're going to have to get a bit of practice in, aren't we?
Because I think so.
You are going to have to remember to turn your mic on. I don't think I can say that at the beginning of a show starring Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I will try my hardest. And you'll have to be careful on shuffling your papers. They don't shuffle, do they?
No.
But however technically inept we are, we promise to make it very Christmassy and have lots of laughs just for you, Jane, from Vancouver. And I'll tell you what made me laugh this week, and that was Alexia on our Facebook group, who posted some pictures of her Christmas tree, which she's already put up in November, a bit early, but she has a good reason. Alexa says, it's been a bit of a hormone frenzy in our house of late, with some added life stresses thrown into the hormone mix. So us three girls at the house decided to pink the hell out of the tree this year. Keep calm, ladies, and find joy in bonding over the tree with your teenagers. And are you loving my idea of making an upcycled garland with my HRT sachets? Love and positive vibes to all ladies feeling exasperated. You are not alone. I mean, let's unpack that. There's so much in there.
Yeah.
Teenagers, there's early Christmas, there's being overwhelmed, and there's an HRT garland, sachet garland.
I don't know what to think about that, Trish. I'll tell you who wouldn't like that, Trish. You know who wouldn't like that, don't you?
Who
doesn't have the spirit and joy of the season?
Is it Marion?
Marion. The woman who sent us an email to say, tosh,
yeah,
drivel,
nonsense, yes,
waffling
exactly.
On women. Well, we hear you, Alexia. It's a very good picture on the Facebook page, and we hear you about the teens. She should patent that HRT. She should take it on Dragon's Den, shouldn't she?
Yes, HRT sachet garland. No
it's
less.
Very sustainable. Anyway, I'll tell you what didn't make me laugh when I had a look on the Facebook group. It was Sally's post, which had a picture from a gift guide in New York, which is a portable fan, and the title of it was "For Grandmother Going Through the Change." I mean, for God's sake, 2021, four middle-aged women are allowed on an audio broadcast. This can't go on anymore.
Oh,
anyway, I tell you what we would like, though. This would be your Christmas present, listeners, to us. We would like some of your Christmas tales for our Christmas special. Sort of family rituals, disappointing gifts, the moments you put your foot down and said, no, I will not do it. Those people will not come round for Christmas dinner. And we want all of that. We're going to start a thread on the Facebook group, and we would like to add that in to our Christmas special. Now, if you're not a member of our private Facebook group, which is a very exclusive club, isn't it, Trish? We're on it all the time. Lots of famous people are on it, and lots of experts are on it too. Do join up, because it's a great way that we can stay in touch and keep the midlife conversation going and all our connections while we're off air until we're back in January 2022. Imagine that, 2022.
It's not that far, a few weeks away, but it sounds like a long way. But right, let's get back to the laughs, because our special guest today is a screenwriter who has scripted some of our all-time favourite funny TV shows and characters, including Veep, The Thick of It, Have I Got News for You, as well as our current obsession, Succession. She is Georgia Pritchett, and she'll be joining us to talk about her new memoir called My Mess is a Bit of a Life. And what a life she has had. She's going to be telling us all about that.
Well, I love a memoir, Trish. I'm writing your memoir as we speak. I haven't quite got the title right yet.
Oh, no.
Something about being small but big at the same time.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, let's get on with our Postcards from Midlife 2021 memoir.
What a year it's been for Postcards from Midlife. Thanks to all you lovely listeners. We've topped the Apple charts on more than one occasion, and we've had some phenomenal guests sharing all kinds of expertise and life experiences. So tell me, Lorraine, who have been some of your favourites?
Oh, well, they were all brilliant. We've had 78 episodes, I noticed, on the Acast listings.
Yes.
Very exciting.
That's across nearly 2 years, though, not just 2021.
Okay, yes, okay. Sorry about that. That's why I didn't get any qualifications, because I don't double check anything. No. I just say it.
We're talking about 2021 here.
All right, got it. Okay,
get with the program.
Yeah, on it. Anyway, one of my favourite guests was Dame Leslie Regan from Wellbeing of Women. And she just told the most amazing life story, didn't she? Mm-hmm. She's, well, kind of one of the leading lights in gynecological medicine, reproductive medicine, and women's health, basically. And she'd had cancer, breast cancer, 3 times. Mm. And she just had such an amazingly positive attitude. She had tons and tons of information for us. But I just loved listening to her. And one of the things that really struck me was she said something like she realized in her late 50s that she needed to be needed. And that's why she wanted to just keep working as long as possible. And I thought it's lovely to hear someone realize that and for it to be a positive thing, not a negative thing. I loved Martine Wright, the Paralympian.
A couple of weeks ago she was on. Yes.
Oh my goodness. She's going to be climbing a mountain now. She's got Olympic medals. She's just extraordinary.
Yes.
Extraordinary. And Asma Mir actually was one of my favorite guests because I think we talked to her when she was in the thick of a very, very tough time family wise. You know, she's going through a divorce, she had a young child, she had a massive job, she was broadcasting from home on Times Radio, and I think she was just so honest. And it's so lovely to hear women talking about being vulnerable, because it means we can all talk about it, doesn't it? We all make mistakes, we all get it wrong, we're all on a journey, we're all evolving. And I think it was really great listening to her, and her honesty was really refreshing. I've got a few personal girl crushes, can we say?
Yes, I think so. I don't know, we'll have to ask, check in with the teens, or maybe not, but anyway, we're saying it.
Julia Samuel, the grief therapist, just such a, you know, her book Living Losses was just so brilliant, and she was so helpful. I was kind of scribbling all that down, took a lot of that into my day-to-day life. And obviously Carolyn Harris, the MP we all fell in love with. What a life. Such awful tragedy to go through, losing her 8-year-old son in a car accident, and then really turning her life into such a force for good. She's the MP who she has changed. It is changing. She was endeavouring to make HRT free in England, as it is in Wales and Scotland. But it's not going to be free, but it's going to be a one-off payment, hopefully next year. But she's just so lovely, wasn't she?
Because she's the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Menopause, isn't she? And I think that whole, just what we've seen in 2021 with the conversation and narrative around menopause is remarkable. And to hear Carolyn standing up in Parliament, talking about it, getting mentioned to talk about it, it's just, I mean, that would not have happened 2 years ago when we started this podcast,
and
would it?
Quickly. So that's amazing. It's happened really, really quickly. You know, a TV documentary commissioned and out within 6 months of it being sorted, and this subject matter being on the news, on the radio today. Rod Stewart, did you see that piece in the Times today?
Yes.
Rod Stewart said Penny Lancaster had been through such a traumatic time with her menopause that more men should know about it.
Yes.
I mean, when one of their own starts talking about it, you would hope that the patriarchy might start to prick their ears up and help us on this journey.
Rod knows a thing or two. He's been around the block, hasn't he? So we're liking that, him leading the charge with the men. So
who have been your favourite ladies on the podcast?
I think you're right. It's like when you look at our website, if you go onto our website page, dear listeners, and have a look at the page with all the episodes, and you do scroll down all those women, I mean, my goodness, it is a sea of just the most fabulous, brilliant women out there, you know, from Emma Freud, Mary McCartney, Sadie Frost, all the new, you know, experts and people that we've had this year. But the ones, a couple that stood out for me, again, I think it's just about those amazing personal stories of and journeys of going from somewhere in your life, a dark place, to a lighter place, etc. And Amanda Prowse, the novel.
She's brilliant.
She's so lovely and warm and friendly. And she has this wonderful midlife story. She has a rags to riches, you know, now a millionaire.
She was a cleaner, wasn't she? Yeah.
She was living in a council house. Now she's living in a mansion, and all because she started writing books in her 40s and became successful.
Well over 100 rejections for her first novel, didn't she? And she just kept going back again and again and making it work in the end. Yeah. It was such an extraordinary story. And her book about her relationship with her son was so moving.
Exactly, because he had depression and it was how she supported him and lived with that. So I think there's a lot of life lessons in that episode for sure. And then the beauty journalist, Ate Jewel, I really enjoyed her interview as well, because it was so surprising, really, because she is she's somebody who we wanted to talk to her about emotional eating and well-being, because she's somebody, she put on 10 stone in her 30s, right. Yeah. And it all sort of really tied back to a sort of upbringing in which her you know, parental expectations, her father called her fat, her mother divorced the father when she found out he was a UN diplomat and he was sort of had families all around the world, and the mother divorced him, but the mother was of this sort of generation of women who were constantly on diets, and the only way your value was, you know, as a woman, and your power with men was how you looked and how your body was. So I thought that was a really interesting one. And then just how she succeeded, I mean, she went to Bristol University, she was the only Black student in a year of 200 studying history at Bristol, and you know, she'd been told by her head teacher not to apply for Oxford. So what she sort of overcome, and again her story, I just thought was so interesting. And then my little crush, Nikki Chapman.
Yes, I knew it would be Nikki. She's got your dream job, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. I think she has. So Nikki, she's sort of been quite integral culturally, hasn't she, in terms of like, she did all the PR for the Spice Girls as she was of that sort of 90s music era. And now she presents Escape to the Country. Yes. The Chelsea,
which is your dream, escaping to the country.
Love a bit of that. That'd be quite good, wouldn't it? Anyway, those were my little highlights. I think of many, so many highlights.
So, you know, midlife is about reinvention and changing things. There've been quite a few guests that have reinvented themselves. Lovely Louise Minchin, who reinvented herself after going on BBC as a triathlete, but is now I'm a Celebrity, doing brilliantly there. Lovely Meg Matthews, who was our first guest, actually has gone to live in Cornwall, sold everything up and gone down there. And Davina McCall has reinvented in a way, hasn't she? Because she did present the Channel 4 documentary Sex Myths and the Menopause with Davina McCall. And she really is, I think, probably the menopause warrior on television now. I mean, you can go from presenting The Masked Singer really, and she's presenting another documentary. She's making another documentary that will be out next year. She's writing a book on it. She gives talks on menopause and perimenopause. I just think she's done that impossible thing to continue with her very high profile career, where, you know, her age just doesn't seem to be important, and also to be talking about something which is vitally important to women. Yeah. She can do something lighthearted and incredibly serious. I think that's a really sort of mega reinvention.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, her interview was just, it was just lovely, wasn't it? It was so, and I think it's a bit cheeky, but I feel like whenever we talk to these women, it's like they're our friends. You're just having a chat with your mates, and then when you then see them in things, doing amazing things afterwards, you're like, oh, there's my friend. I was watching that programme Ridley Road, that drama series, which had the fabulous Tamsin Althwaite in it, sporting a very large beehive. You're looking this at me blankly. You haven't seen it, have you?
No, this is your afternoon.
Well, it's a Sunday
telly
night. Well, it might be, but I did. It was a Sunday night BBC One drama. So it's set in the 60s, obviously. And we love that Tamsin, because she talked about her younger boyfriend, who she's still with, I believe. Anyway, when I saw her on there, I was like, oh, there's Tamsin. And then likewise, Jackie Clune, the sort of actress, comedian, writer, she's popped up in Ghosts. And then I got a nice little surprise. I was watching a Stephen Lawrence drama, and she popped up in that. I was like, oh, there's Jackie in the Stephen Lawrence drama, alongside Alan Partridge, or rather Steve Coogan, but Steve Coogan was playing a police officer, and it was hard not to think of him as Alan Partridge trying to bring the Stephen Lawrence to justice.
I mean, some would argue, Trish, that we are the Alan Partridge of podcasts, wouldn't they?
Oh God.
What my favourite Alan Partridge sketch is the one in the restaurant when he's being interviewed about television ideas, and they all get rejected, and he gets so cross that he just grabs the Stilton with his fork and shoves it into the TV man's face and says, "Smell my cheese, you mother." Monkey tennis, all of it. Just so very funny.
I know, Alan Partridge. Cheese. But cheese, that's been on your mind this year. Cheese, hasn't it?
Can someone explain to me why becoming a vegetarian means basically becoming a cheesetarian? Because that's all I do now is eat cheese. That's on my CV. She eats cheese. This woman eats cheese. I discovered, and I mentioned it on the show, all the cheese platter accounts, didn't I, on Instagram?
Yes.
Because we do like to be useful, don't we?
Amazing now, research, amazing reporting, investigative journalism into cheese platters.
Can I tell you a cheese joke?
Oh, go on then.
There's been an explosion in a cheese factory, Trish. Debris everywhere.
Oh.
How do you hide? Oh. What do you call cheese that hides a small horse?
Oh, mascarpone.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
What
I knew
do
that
you
one.
Give?
Oh, come on. They're all in the Christmas crackers.
Okay. All right. Anyway, moving on. The other things I learned on the show. Probiotics, that's changed my life.
Your tummy.
Kefir, that's been very helpful.
Fermenting.
Yeah. Gua sha with Katie Brindle, the kind of, I suppose it's rubbing, isn't it? Cleansing.
Facial massage, I think it is, isn't it? With the jade stone and some lovely oil. Very good for invigorating the complexion.
I have. And I quite like my new fasting until 10 o'clock in the morning from 8 o'clock the night before. That seems to have been helpful in my midlife nutritional journey. We keep saying journey, don't we?
Yeah.
Because we want the millennials to listen to us. What have you learned?
Well, I too was with Katie Brindle, the Chinese medicine practitioner, who was fabulous. She got us tapping, didn't she, with this sort of strange birch, was it birch? Whatever it is, like device. You tap, 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 tap all over your body and it sort of stimulates your lymphatic system, which I am still doing nearly 1 year on. So that one really stayed with me. And I was tapping away as well, doing that sort of facial tapping thing through something called Poppy Delbridge. Do you remember I interviewed Poppy? And it's sort of, it's like a sort of meditation-y thing where you tap away at your face, which was really brilliant. But possibly more practical, the strength training for me has been a winner this year. We had Amanda Thebe, the fitness expert, on, didn't we? And for my slightly brittle bones, I've been doing lots of weights, lots
tiny
of strength.
Tiny bird-like bones.
They're stronger now. I've got a few little tiny muscles.
You are the rock of podcasting, aren't you now?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. We had quite a lot of dogs and animals featuring, didn't we?
They do come up. I mean, obviously, Margot is the star of Postcards from Midlife, my nemesis. But we had an unusually high quota of dogs,
I'd say so.
Accidentally and deliberately on the show. So Bobby Brown had her dog with her when we interviewed her in Florida. Then Erica Davis's dog just barked her head off.
Yes, last week.
All the way through.
Little Stevie barking away.
Elizabeth Hurley had to let her dog, her spaniel, in, her pregnant spaniel, in, didn't she? Because it's pouring at the door for the whole of the recording. And then the Sarah Brown, Gordon Brown dog.
Oh, that was good.
Gordon came in, didn't he, to say the dog had eaten all the special food for the visitors off the table.
Yes, he was having a lunch and the dog was at the lunch table, I think, while Sarah was trying to do the podcast with us. It's just loved a bit of domestic life. This is the joy of doing it on Zoom, isn't it? Because we get to kind of have a little peer in. I mean, we had a wander around McCartney family home when we interviewed
Mary. Well, they were all in lockdown together, weren't they? Mary and Paul, everybody was there together. So it was the original home they all grew up in.
Exactly. We saw the photos on the wall. We saw the lovely curtains. And she was wandering around trying to get a good signal. And we were like, just keep wandering.
Keep going.
We want to see more. It was lovely. And then we did have a bit of a moment when Richard Curtis popped up, didn't he? When we were interviewing Emma Freud in their rather fabulous Notting Hill kitchen, joined in the chat with the old postcard from Midlifers.
Yeah. We are mingling, Trish, with icons, which obviously you know I like to do. That's my... That's my daily diet. We do have some nostalgia noodle favourites to talk about as well, because lots of people, when they stop me in the street and say, and this has happened, I'm not making up or fantasising or dreaming about it. Are you Lorraine Candy? Do you present Postcards from Midlife with Trish Alp? And I say, yes, I am. And they say, I love nostalgia noodle. Oh. I love it. And then they tell me one of their nostalgia noodles. They say, well, you must do this, you must do that. And usually we've done it. But I have two very fabulous step backs in time of yours that I'd like to bring back.
I'm blushing already.
Know what I'm going to bring back, don't you? Because I like saying the word. It's very It's very 1980s. You brought your school embroidery.
Yes.
Of a cock, didn't you?
Shall I explain? Or do you want to explain? Do you want to just hear that? My embroidered cock was an embroidered cock on a ball. It was my cushion I made with some embroidery of the Tottenham Hotspur logo.
For no apparent reason. As it turns out,
it was my inspiration for my embroidery class.
Can you remind me why your friend Barbara used to brush your hair?
Babs from up the road, because we had the Love Is Club, didn't we? Was that the thing? Is that what you're talking
about? That's it, from the Love Is cartoons.
We had a Love Is Club.
I think you might have to explain further.
I don't it was the Love Is Club, but essentially it was a sort of board in this, you know, summer holidays, and we'd had a club. It was a bit like the Brownies, where you had to do things to get points and badges and Love Is badges and things. And one of the things would have been washing and brushing someone's hair, giving them a little, you know, shampoo and set.
I can't wait until your therapist explains what that caused you to do. Okay. What do you remember of my nostalgia?
Well, mine, obviously, it could be back to your first name drop, I'm thinking. Oh, I like your ones back to your Cornish. No, that's terrible.
No, you can't do that. Cornish. I can do a Cornish accent.
Cornish accent.
Because I am Cornish. I don't know what that was.
Radio 1 Roadshow, you interviewing Peter Powell. Down in, was it Cornwall or was it in Devon?
It was Cornwall on the beach.
It was Cornwall on the beach.
He was on some beach in southeast Cornwall when I was at the Cornish Times as a work experience.
I liked that one because someone then popped a little picture of Peter Powell at the Radio 1 Roadshow from the 80s on the Facebook page. And our visions of it being some massive concert, it was basically a sort of caravan with a bit of sand next to it. 40
story of my life.
Standing in front of it. But it was the beginning of a long journey of
schmoozing
and name dropping for you, I would say.
No, I an award-winning journalistic career.
Yes, sorry. Yes, that's the way to describe it. But I can't let the first kiss nostalgia noodle one go aside without mentioning Vernon once again. First kiss.
The people who wrote, the lady who wrote on the Facebook group saying, I know Vernon. And I said, well, no, you don't, because the timing's wrong and the place is wrong.
Yes, but I think you're just saying that now because you don't want Vernon to find you.
Well, he might find me, mightn't he?
Maybe 2022 will be the year.
Do you think he might have changed his name to something famous now? Or he might actually be someone famous now. Maybe he was in Duran Duran. Maybe it was Simon Owen. It's actually Vernon.
See, let's just try and make it all about a celebrity.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you are a fan of Succession, In the Thick of It, Veep, or Have I Got News for You, then you are in for a treat today on the podcast. We've got scriptwriter Georgia Pritchett on the show to talk to us about one of the funniest memoirs we've ever read, My Mess is a Bit of a Life, which has just come out. Georgia, 53, began her career on Radio 4 almost 3 decades ago and went on to write scripts for Spitting Image, Joe Brand, Lenny Henry, Miranda Hart, Smack the Pony, and many, many more TV series and legends of comedy. Her sharp, witty satire has helped win the shows she worked on prestigious awards. And this month, you'll have no doubt enjoyed every minute of Succession's blisteringly funny dialogue. Londoner Georgia's career has seen her flit between the red carpets of Hollywood and the lay-bys of Surrey, where she once handed Ronnie Corbett an envelope of jokes in return for an envelope of cash. Her poignant and charming book follows Georgia's adventures in comedy, as well as telling the personal story of her lifelong battle with anxiety. She's a mum of two non-neurotypical teenage boys, as she describes them, and has been with her partner, Catherine Bailey, 21 years. We'll be chatting about what inspires her humour, her experiences working in a predominantly male world, one where she was once asked if women really can be funny, and also her midlife journey. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Georgia.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
Now, I think we're going to start by asking you about your book, My Mess is a Bit of a Life, and why you wrote it, because it's quite a phenomenal book, actually. It's a kind of collection of short, witty essays which follow your life chronologically. But I also found it incredibly moving. It's a really emotional read, actually, because you write about so much. You write about the fertility treatment you had to become pregnant and then losing your first baby. You write about coming out as gay to your parents. You write about how you were sexually assaulted by a famous male entertainer as a young writer and how he contacted you later to say sorry. You write about your partner and how you've parented your two boys through quite difficult times, often battling with an unyielding education system. And you also write about your partner's initial diagnosis with cancer, which initially they thought was terminal. You write about your anxiety. It's a lot. I was sort of tearful at times and then crying with laughter. It's such a journey. It's such a different kind of book to read. So why did you want to share all of that? It's so personal. Normally you're behind the scenes, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, I didn't really. That was the very last thing I wanted to do. My agent suggested that I write a memoir a while ago, and I said in no uncertain terms, the one thing we can be certain of in this life is that I will never, ever write a memoir. So, yes, this is all a bit embarrassing, but I think lapse of judgment, lockdown madness, yes, I suddenly decided to go for it.
And you just put it all on the page from start to finish, didn't you? Really everything you've been through. How does it feel having finished that? Is it cathartic?
Pretty horrifying, as you say, a very private person. And, you know, being a scriptwriter is the perfect job for a private person because you literally get to put words in other people's mouths and it's very anonymous. No one ever knows who you are. You express yourself by stealth. So, yeah, to write something so direct and personal is a bit of a shock, really. But I think I just reached an age where I thought, I don't think I care what people think anymore. And I think I owe it to younger women to be honest about things, to tell the truth about how this world and particularly my industry can be if you're a woman.
And anxiety really underpins your sort of life, really, from your childhood right through to the end of the book. And that kind of sense of the anxiety and the depression mounting is so powerful in the way that you write it. You are or have seen a therapist finally after seeing your GP, a GP prescribed for you to go and see a therapist. How has that helped? Where are you with the anxiety right now?
Well, there's several things. One is, you know, I'm so interested in words. And then sometimes you get to a point in life where you can't find the right words or there aren't the right words to express something. And so that was surprising and confusing for me. And also, I think I'm British. I'm not used to verbally expressing my feelings. We all play roles, don't we, in our lives? And I think as a comedy writer, I definitely felt it was literally my job to be happy and that therefore I couldn't express anything other than that. I think years of just squashing everything down, eventually there was no more room and it all came erupting out of me.
Do you feel better now?
Yeah, I still find it difficult to talk about my feelings, but I think writing things down definitely helped because I think when you're in the middle of the sort of mayhem of life, it's so easy to be hard on yourself and think I should be doing better. I should be a better mother, partner, daughter, you know, writer, everything. But I think when you write things down and look back, you do kind of find a little sliver of compassion for yourself and think, oh, I was trying my best, you know, maybe I'm not the biggest idiot to walk the planet. That definitely helped. And I think you just reach an age where you want to stop pretending and you want to be a bit more authentic and engage with people on a more honest level. And that makes a big difference.
It seemed as if you were really struggling to think about where to go for help, because there are bits in it in the book where you're going to see the homeopath. And I'm like, don't go to the homeopath. Go to a therapist.
Don't open
go
that
to the
door.
GP. Yeah. But do you think therapy, is that something you'd be an advocate of now?
As you say, I tried everything, homeopaths, had my ears checked, my eyes checked, you know, my thyroid. You just hope that there's some simple physical thing and that a pill will make it all better. So yeah, definitely therapy was the last resort. It was not something that I wanted to do, but it definitely is helpful, I think.
I think we could call you a comedy hero, because particularly for women, you've written some really big, brilliant female characters into the shows that you've helped create and been on the writing teams of. How difficult, I guess going back a bit, is it to get a female character, funny woman, at the centre of TV comedy?
It's incredibly difficult, if not impossible. I've been writing now for 30 years, and over here, every broadcaster has said to me, no, we already have something with women in it, because you wouldn't want more than one.
More than one.
Too much. You'd get confused. You wouldn't know what show you were watching, because a woman would keep popping up. Yeah. That's been very dispiriting. And, you know, it's really interesting now I get to work in the States, which I think we can agree after the last election has proved itself to be a pretty sexist place. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, in the world of comedy, they're way ahead of us. And whereas in the UK, comedy is very male and very Oxbridge-y. And for years, for decades, the female roles in sitcoms were either nags or slags. You were either the sort of sensible girlfriend tutting and providing the setup lines, or you were the sort of oversexed, hilarious older woman who still wanted sex, lived next door and was nosy. But, you know, in the States, what's so amazing is that right from the beginning of TV comedy is they've had women, you know, right from Lucille Ball and Mary Tyler Moore and Rhoda and right through to Roseanne and Ellen, they've always had women in the leads. They've always had women writers. They've always believed women were funny and wanted to hear their point of view. And we just haven't had that in the UK. I'm still not too sure why. Even now, you know, one of the most successful sitcoms in the UK is a man dressed up as a woman.
And I don't understand that at all. I can't work it out.
I think it would be great if it was a woman.
It's not funny either, is it?
No, it's not. We all know what we're talking about here. Yes.
I don't, you know, as a comedy writer, I always think that's fine if I don't like it, because other people do. And I know it's hard to make people laugh. So I don't want to judge its comedy value, but I just think, why are we a society that embraces a man dressed as a woman more than a woman? You know, wouldn't it be great to have an older woman lead a sitcom? That would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's the same in the US right now, but certainly here in the UK, everybody you talk to is obsessed with Succession because it's being shown weekly on Sky. I mean, my goodness, Series 3, it is absolutely cracking. And we absolutely are total fans of Veep as well. But with Succession, Lorraine and myself and Amanda, our producer, we're all obsessed with Jerry in particular. Yeah. We love Jerry. How did she come to life? And tell us about writing her character.
She's so good, isn't she?
She's an older woman, isn't she?
Yeah, she's an older woman.
And sexy and all of that.
She's hot, Jerry.
Yeah. I think that is so much to do with the brilliant actress Jade Smith Cameron, because I think originally, to be honest, it was a man called Jerry, and the couple of women in the writer's room were like, could it be a woman?
Oh, brilliant.
Working in such a male environment, I very much relate to her, that I think it would be very easy for that role to be not much, you know, just a woman in a man's world amongst women. But she brings such nuance and interest to it, and you just know to survive in that world. She's been through so much and she's put up with so much, and she's somehow kept her course and not been put off and fought her corner. She's worked with Kieran, who plays Roman, since he was a teenager, and they had this incredible chemistry, and that gave us the idea for this, in heavy quotation marks, romance between the two, because we kind of thought Roman is so damaged, he wouldn't be capable of a sort of healthy, loving, intimate relationship. So probably the closest he can come to is this weird Oedipal thing with Jerry. But because they're both so great, what could be kind of either just funny or a bit disgusting is really, I think, quite moving and fascinating. And I mean, who wouldn't want to be in a relationship with Jerry?
She's fabulous. She's like the most intelligent one of them all as well. Yeah. She clearly is the one with some actual brains as well. Yeah.
I think what's really clever about her is there could be moments when it looks like she's mothering Logan as well, because she's often the only woman in the room. And when we've all been the only woman in the room, sometimes they overlay that mothering thing on you and you feel like you have to, and she doesn't ever go into that mode, does she?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think what's so interesting about this series is she is, you know, in theory, the boss, and you could see how little respect that she's given still, that she's not taken seriously in the way that she would be if she were a man.
And Roman, I know he's one of your favourite. I follow you on Twitter. It's very funny, you and your love of Roman on Twitter.
Yes.
Is it easy to write such an obnoxious character? I mean, I know he's damaged and we should feel for that. But, you know, he is a hideous personality, isn't he? Is it easy to write someone like that?
It's not. I seem to have sort of carved out this niche of writing for pretty irredeemable, awful people. But I think, it's a fun challenge as a writer. If you can find the humanity and find some compassion for them, it makes it really interesting. And I think what I've always focused on is what can't money buy you. Obviously, they have all the money in the world, but for Roman, it can't buy you a loving relationship and the love that you crave from your father. And, you know, if you look at their sort of awful behavior as coming from a place of pain and damage, that it makes it sort of more interesting to watch.
And Selena in Veep, the president, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she's not massively likeable. I mean, she's my favorite character, but she's not massively likable either, is she?
She isn't, but it was such a relief when I got to write for her. I think, as I say, having written in the UK, you know, we've got this weird thing where if women did have parts, as I say, were either nags or slags, or they have to be sort of perfect mothers or perfect wives in some way. So to finally write for a woman who was far from perfect, who had terrible sort of flaws and was selfish and, you know, terrible mother, was really exciting and liberating. And again, you know, a woman in a man's world, that her sort of bad behavior, we kind of can forgive a lot of it, because we just know she's had to suck it up for her entire life in that terrible world. So she's been kind of poisoned by them, really.
And played by such a brilliant actress who I know has become a close friend of yours, hasn't she? And that, you talk a little bit about the relationship in the book, and it is, we're just jealous, aren't we? And I'd like to talk about Gary and the Leviathan as well, the bag. I mean, he's that's my favourite as well. He's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, he's fantastic. In fact, I was talking to Julia recently about him, but I was complaining about my teenage sons. And I was saying my relationship to my teenage sons is like Gary and Selena, in that I just love them so much. And I'm so devoted and besotted and just hand them whatever they need and give them whatever they need. Yeah. And they're so sort of, you know, somewhere between ignoring me and just thinking I'm an idiot, which is, you know, it feels very Gary and Selena.
We're all Garys, aren't we, basically?
We are all
So working in LA, you've talked about how different it is being in a room full of female writers. But, I mean, moving from, like, London to what must be seen quite glamorous in LA, your life must be quite varied and quite different. How do you kind of make that work for you?
It is. It's astonishing, actually. It's very odd. I feel like I found a little sort of door to Narnia, because when I work over here, I'm treated with quite a lot of respect, which I find quite difficult and uncomfortable. Yeah, it's very odd. I'm not used to it. I'm much, much happier with the way I'm treated at home by my sons and all of men in the industry. But yes, I think they just really value writers and actors and creative arts in a way that perhaps we're too... I mean, I do love Brits and their self-loathing, but we it's interesting as well in comedy that so many... the sort of British comedies in history have been really about our self-loathing and laughing at our incompetence and mocking ourselves, whether it's sort of Fawlty Towers or The Office. It's people who are dreadful and we mock them and we hate them and they're funny because they're such idiots, you know. And in America, of course, it's much more aspirational and they create funny people who make jokes to make their friends laugh. Whatever it is, it's kind of stuff that makes us feel better about ourselves and about our lives rather than worse. So it's very different, I must say. It's like learning another language.
I guess we should talk about the sexism because it is kind of a theme of the book and you do write about it so well and we've all kind of experienced it. We've had every probably midlife woman in the UK on the show and they've all got a story to tell. So you talk in the book about a 61-year-old man who assaulted you in a lift when you were 25 and 2 decades later he rang to apologise. So I just wonder, I guess, is it changing? How do you think you dealt with that over the years and how do you deal with that emotion now? Because I think it comes up now and again, that emotion, when you think of the things that have happened. And, you know, Trish and I have talked about this and we think, well, why didn't we say anything? Or, you know, why, what, you know, makes us cross now and it's a shame, isn't it?
I think that's a really good question. I think for so long, I mean, I did try and get help at the time, but as I say in the book, the women sort of turned their backs on me in the situation. And I think it's very difficult, isn't it? We're so kind of primed to not complain. I think that's part of the thought process I had writing the book was, well, I think there's a difference between complaining and being honest. I don't think I'm complaining about it. I mean, I wish it hadn't happened, but I think...
Also, you don't want to affect your career, do you? That's
the thing, exactly, about your
future.
Yeah. You don't want to be considered a difficult woman or whatever it is. And I think that's a way of keeping us quiet. And I think more and more women now are being honest, being brave, telling the truth. And I think that is not only good for other women to hear, but I think it's great for men to hear because we've kind of let them off the hook for so long and not bothered them with our problems.
And it's an exhausting thing to work around all your life, isn't it? As Jerry has done, you know.
Yes, whether it's sort of health issues or sexism or sexual assault, whatever it is, we haven't liked to talk about it. And I think now talking about it really is the thing that's going to change it because hopefully younger women won't feel that pressure to stay silent, which I think is really important.
One of the great things we loved about the book is that it's like this cultural dictionary of everything we've ever watched or listened to.
So British.
As we've grown up, it's so British. And as, you know, part of Generation X, every reference in there, we get it. You know, we totally get it. And we actually have a section on this little podcast called Nostalgia Noodle, where we look back on something from our childhoods or our teenagers. And you've got everything in there from Mr. Ben, Fuzzy the Bear, the Muppets, the two Ronnies. But we particularly like your George Michael encounter. That was fantastic. Yeah. We try and talk about him at least
every week.
He just seems to make his way onto the podcast. Now, do you think you could possibly read your piece on meeting George
for us
from the book?
Very funny.
It is so funny.
I decided at a young age that I was going to marry George Michael. We were going to be George and Georgia Michael. For so many reasons, it was a love that could never be. But it took me a long time to give up on it. By this time in my life, some friends and I had started a small animation company and we were cooped up in a tiny office in the middle of Soho. One day I answered the phone and the voice said it was George Michael. We were working with impressionists and my obsession with him was well known, so I presumed it was a joke. But the voice insisted it wasn't and gave an address to come to. The next day, my friend Giles and I headed to the address and found ourselves at a decidedly dodgy looking door. We knocked on the door and waited. Eventually, it opened and we were led downstairs to a huge, sumptuous recording studio. And there he was, my tiny, stubbly husband-to-be, smoking an enormous joint. George explained that he wanted us to animate a video for his new track. He asked if we wanted to hear the track. We nodded dumbly. He turned on some music so loudly that my eardrums had a seizure. He then watched us as we listened. Not sure how to react, we started nodding our heads, clicking our fingers and tapping our feet, trying to look cool. It was excruciating. George had a lot of things he wanted to say about politics, about Tony Blair, about George Bush and about the Iraq War. I wished he would just wiggle his tiny leather-clad hips, but he didn't want to be in the video. So we animated his thoughts about Tony Blair, about George Bush and about the Iraq War and contributed to one of his worst-selling singles of all time. Nobody wanted to hear what he thought about politics. They just wanted him to wiggle his tiny leather-clad hips. People are shallow, ignorant idiots. And when I say people, I very much mean me.
Oh, George. We had a guest on, Kate Thornton, who he rang her to talk to her as well, and she didn't believe it was him, put the phone down.
Oh, I can't How believe he's got him. Tiny hips. Was he tiny? Yes. He was a short, tiny person.
Tiny, yes.
Didn't know that. Big voice.
Yeah. That's this week's tribute to George. Yes. Taken care of. So apart from George, which obviously unites all British midlife women, the other thing that we talk to everyone about, listen to this link, Trish, we're almost professional podcasters, it's the perimenopause. I've just gone from George Michael to the perimenopause. Yay. Can you talk to us about the menopause and perimenopause? Because I'm assuming that that will be linked in some way to your anxiety and what you went through from your, or not, I don't know your story. Yes. What's been your midlife experience?
Oh my God, I wish you'd told me that at the time. I had no idea. Have you read Catelyn Moran's essay about
that? We had her on the show to talk about it.
I mean, I think that saved my life. That analogy of it being like going cold turkey off a lovely drug was very much my experience. I got heavily into rap music. And I,
that's not on the list of symptoms, by the way.
It should be, because I think the inner rage felt by the menopausal woman is very resonant with the anger that a lot of rap artists express. So I suddenly, and to my great surprise, found myself driving around in my Nissan Leaf with the windows down, blaring out Eminem and NWA and things. And I think, the inner rage was a shock. Again, going back to this thing of words, you know, my job is all about words. Suddenly just losing words, just not being able to think of words. A very interesting thing happened in that I overnight lost all surnames. I would have thought someone's name was, you know, I hope I'm not blinding you with science, but I imagine our brain's just full of a lot of filing cabinets. And I would have thought that someone's name is stored together, but it turns out their first names are stored in one filing cabinet and their surnames are stored in another filing cabinet. And I just ditched that filing cabinet. I now can't remember anyone's surname in the entire world. Then from a physical point of view, and I don't know if this is on the list, but my hot flushes are focused just onto my thighs. I could fry an egg at 2 a.m. on my thigh. If
it's
ever
a superpower.
It is a superpower. If only
frying egg woman,
harness it to fight crime in some way. But I mean, I need to invent a special duvet or sheet that just has a sort of window because the rest of me is freezing all the time. If you're ever hungry at 2 a.m. and want me to rustle up some kind of sizzling dish on my thigh, pop round.
Did you talk to your GP about hormone replacement therapy? Were you offered antidepressants? What was your experience?
No, I kept going and they kept saying that I wasn't menopausal, perimenopausal, that my whatever's they are were in some normal range. But I clearly was. It was utterly baffling. Someone told me that if you're over 50, they go by symptoms. And if you're under 50, they go by that hormone level. So, yeah,
that's,
if you're
well, having that's symptom, not true. Yeah,
yeah, they should it's go. They should only always. Go by symptoms. Yeah.
I mean, I had panic attacks for the first time, couldn't remember which side of the road to drive on, all sorts of things were just inexplicable. But I mean, I guess when you were going through that and also thinking about would have increased your anxiety, that might explain why you saw so many people before you got to the therapy situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I wish a doctor had suggested that that might be it, because I literally went to a dementia clinic because I was just forgetting so much.
We did.
That I thought
early onset dementia of some sort.
And that was so frustrating because I was like, I know who the Prime Minister is, but I just don't know pretty much anything else. I can't remember anything else.
I sat in the car, confused as to which side of the road to drive on. So I went back in to ask my husband because I'd forgotten. I don't know which side of my teenagers were witnessing. And that was absolute confirmation I was a moron. You saw a healer as well, didn't you?
Too? Yeah.
That's
depressing. Don't do that. I think that's just a sort of indication of how desperate. And again, wanting that sort of quick fix. Like, I don't want to talk about anything. I just want someone to waggle a stone over me and for everything to be better.
I went down the therapy route thinking that I was having a nervous breakdown and, know, all of that. And then it wasn't really until we started doing this podcast and started talking to experts about it and went on HRT at the age of 51, wasn't it? 52. Yeah. Oh, it's been a game changer. It's been really...
Well, and it's a preventative medicine, Georgia, for osteoporosis and heart disease. So it's often worth checking out.
Whether I am, yes, be on I it am forever. Now. Again, quite recently on the stuff that you rub on yourself. And in fact, the first time, there's so much comes out and I'm quite puny. So the first time I was sort of putting it on, it's like, oh God. And my children were sort of walking past and I had that thing, you know, when you've got some extra sun cream and you just rub it on the nearest person. And I sort of went to just kind of rub it on my son and thought, oh my God,
no. Don't do that. Oh, so in the midst of all of this and your incredible career, you are parenting two teenage boys with your partner, Catherine. Home life with teenagers, let's discuss.
Yeah, the smell of boy is strong in my house. I can't remember who said it, but someone once said to me, you can describe the life of a boy in three liquids. It isn't going to be as bad as you think, trust me. And it's basically cowpole, ketchup, Lynx.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
But your teenagers, it's been quite troublesome for you to get the right education and the right support, haven't you? Because your boys are, what do you call them, non-neurotypical, aren't they?
Yes, it's the great phrase. Trips off your tongue. Yes, non-neurotypical. That's a sort of 10-hour conversation about how difficult it is to get support from your local authority and funding for special schools and how few appropriate schools there are. But yeah, if you can find the right school, it's a life changer. But it's been a struggle. They're both at great schools now. Yeah, we're on the cusp of Lynx. We haven't quite embraced the Lynx in the way that I might like them to.
I think it's the worst of the three. Can I just say it's worse than the ketchup and the cowpole?
Well, there is another liquid which is worse, which we obviously can't talk about. Anyway, Galaxy Quest.
I'm just
bringing that in because I might be a bit of a rarity. It's one of my favourite films with Tim Allen and Sigourney. We watch it all the time with the family because it's one of those that, you know, I've got four kids of such different ages. It's just so brilliant. Now, you are working with Simon Pegg, aren't you, on TV series? Tell me this is true.
It is true. We're both huge fans of the film. And so we're going to see if we can do a sort of TV version of it, and I think the original cast will be in it as often as possible, and then
amazing.
There'll be a next generation cast too.
And you've also helped create The Shrink Next Door with Paul Rudd, who officially world's sexiest man, I believe, just been voted.
Yeah, not in this, he isn't, but...
Oh, no, but... And Will Ferrell, oh, my goodness. I mean, what is can it even be like working with Will Ferrell?
Yeah, and Catherine Hahn.
Oh,
God,
yes.
That was incredible. I mean, what fantastic actors. To be honest, I've always been a Will Ferrell fan, and you know, he's so funny, but I hadn't really realised what a brilliant actor he is. And I think in Shrink Next Door, yeah, I think people will be surprised because he's so moving and heartbreaking and gives such a sort of subtle and restrained performance. He's fantastic.
Sort of halfway between a comedy and a drama, isn't it? It's kind of, yeah. I'm on episode 3 now, and it's yeah, so moving, but it's also really funny as well.
Yeah, well, it's a true story, of course. It was a podcast, and yeah, you know, it felt like I didn't want people to sort of laugh at either character, laugh at the patient for being gullible or an idiot because he sort of has his life taken over. And I didn't want them to kind of dismiss the psychiatrist as kind of evil or a monster, because I thought, well, this is a relationship. This is a 27-year relationship. Yeah. We need to kind of try and understand why this happened rather than just judge it or blame anyone. I really enjoyed making it. I love things that have darkness and light. It seems so true to life, you know, that there's comedy in the darkest moments and tragedy in the funny moment. They're great. Paul is incredible. Catherine is just a powerhouse and brilliant as the patient.
Do you get starstruck?
Yeah, I do. I do all the time. Yeah. And I think it's just so lovely writing for such incredible people. I feel very lucky to be able to do that. Yeah.
You have to go to celebrity dinner parties and make small talk with very famous people.
I am a bit shy and hermity, so I tend not to go out. As I say in my book, I've been to the odd awards ceremony, which is pretty nerve-wracking and I find pretty excruciating. But yeah, I generally just stay at home with my boys in my joggers.
So how do we, as because you're the woman with the power here, the gift, if we want to see more midlife women on television,
yeah,
funny women, and it is a funny, as you say, dark, light time of life. I mean, because yeah, the rage, yeah, I just yeah think the rage is crying out for a whole 24-part yeah series all on its own, quite frankly. Are you going to write one? And how do we get more of these women on telly?
It's so funny. I do keep trying. There was a big push in the UK in drama over the last few years for strong women. And so I thought, great. But then they seem to confuse strong women with psychopaths. So we got all these shows
murderous
about women and murderers. And I wanted to say, I'm a strong woman. I've hardly murdered anyone. I think it's possible.
Not today.
to be strong and not a psychopath. I think they're two different things. I mean, I feel it's a very first world problem, but I consider myself a sort of comedy refugee in that I've had to come abroad to find work because I keep pitching in the UK like a female version of Detectorists. I would just love a show where two women get to talk and not that much happens. And it's just a really sort of beautiful study of a friendship and of two characters. But the good news is that Julia from Veep and I have decided we want to do something together. And so I've had this idea that I'm working on at the moment, which would have Julia and 19 other women in it.
Oh, that will affect the space-time continuum. The Matrix will... They'll have to pack everything in somewhere else.
Yeah, people will be so confused. We'll have to sort of label them as they're on screen.
Woman one, woman two, women. Woman three. Just keep trying. Yes. I want to see it on telly.
Yes. So we're coming up to Christmas. What will Christmas have in store for you? How do you like to spend Christmas?
Well, my partner has a really unreasonable number of relatives who tend to come in waves, a bit like sort of invasion, a bit like the Second World War, just wave upon wave arriving. We'll be at home. My younger son's very into Godzilla, so our Christmas film will be some kind of Godzilla film. They get, what's nice is although they're teenagers, they get really excited still. A couple of years ago, my younger son virtually fainted because he thought he heard Santa's sleigh landing on the roof. Just actually me hoovering upstairs. But so that's really nice. They get excited and it'll be good. I'm a bit allergic to Christmas music, so I tend to...
Oh, hang on. George Michael, Last Christmas.
But not George Michael, obviously. But
Thank you so much, Georgia,
for coming on.
That was just so brilliant. You're just a gift to us. A really funny woman who's writing parts for funny women.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's an honour to be on the show and I love it.
We have reached my favourite bit of the show. Trish, take me back in time. Where have you gone today for our last one of this series? Well, apart from our Christmas special. Go on.
Last but one. Gosh, these nostalgia noodles, they keep coming, don't they? Every week I think, I can't think of another one, and then something pops up.
Doesn't it? And I get jealous. Memory bank. There's a bit of a competitive, oh my God, I've got to think of one now.
Yes, exactly. Well, mine this week was sparked by the news. Coffee, as we know, has overtaken tea as the nation's favourite most drunk hot beverage. And one of these big, massive companies is selling its whole black tea division. I think PG Tips, etc., is all being sold off. And it got me thinking to how, when I was young, we were very much an instant coffee household. And I don't think I actually knew that there were coffee beans or anything like that until I was probably well into my teens. And the coffee of choice, although I think you might struggle to call it coffee, was Mellow Birds. Do you remember that?
The kind of frozen granules.
Oh, no, it was a really fine dust. It was a powder.
It was a powdery dust.
And it had the vaguest.
Real coffee.
But it had the vaguest of coffee tastes. And I have to say, you haven't mentioned my singing in any of your reviews of this year's shows, and you know,
I also
have a little song.
Yeah, I also didn't mention your French speaking either.
Exactly.
I know you like to speak some French
words. Both of which are sort of a bit appalling, but I do like to do it. Anyway, the Mellow Birds advert, TV advert. Do
you're
you going to
do
this?
It now?
Well, there will be a little song, little ditty in a minute. But it was always a woman going to visit another woman's home and being served some coffee that she didn't like. And she'd make an awful face and then she'd pour the coffee into the plant pot. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And then she conveniently, out of her handbag, take a jar of Mellow Birds that she just happened to have.
That's all women used to
do. All she did
during
was go
the day,
shopping and go
for coffee. Yeah.
And so she'd then get the hostess to make her a cup of coffee with the Mellow Birds. And
what was the theme tune? I'm waiting for it. I'm on tenterhooks.
Okay.
Now.
Mellow Birds will make you smile. Do you remember that? And the sort of payoff was the top of the Mellow Birds, they'd open the top of the jar and then draw a little smiley face in the dusty powder. And my sister and I used to fight over who would get to sort of break the seal on the top of the jar and do the smiley face in the foul powdered
happy days
coffee.
Trish,
I know.
What
the joy.
System.
Where have you been?
Oh, well, actually, oddly on the same path somehow. Can I mention David Ginola, who is in I'm a Celebrity?
Oh my, you certainly can. I'm not sure what he's got to
look
do with Mellow Birds or coffee.
Well, he did a coffee advert. So,
oh, right, yes, you're right.
He's in his 50s now, and he did take his top off last night when I was watching it. Anyway, he's in very good condition for a man in his 50s. He was in the Carte Noire advert.
Oh.
And David got me thinking about footballers and hair, long hair.
Ooh, he's got a lovely head of hair.
Not now, it's all short now, but it was shoulder length hair,
yes,
wasn't it? Yeah,
that's
and he
gorgeous.
Was actually in a L'Oreal Elviv advert in his youth. I said to my 15-year-old son, "Oh, David Jonah is very famous. He used to be, you know, very long." He said, "I've got him in my FIFA team. I know what his hair was like." Anyway, it made me think back to a footballer and his hair that would have dominated our 80s childhood. Can you think
I can. Do you want me to spoil it?
Yeah,
do you want me
to spoil it? Because
Kevin Keegan.
Yes.
Obviously. I'm the one who embroidered a cock on a ball. I think I know a bit about 1980s football. Thank you very much.
There's a mystery to you, Trish. Yeah. There's a mysterious side to you I don't know much about, isn't there?
I don't put that in the memoir.
His hair was a perm.
It was a
he was
perm.
One of the first men to talk about having a perm. I think he must have been at Newcastle or Liverpool at the time. Anyway, he's in his 70s now. So I went down quite a dark hole on the internet trying to find out where Kevin Keegan was and what his hair was like now. Oddly, in his 70s, he's had it cut as short as David Ginola.
Oh, is it as white as David Ginola's?
Whiter.
Is
whiter.
It? Oh,
yes.
Okay.
That's
is
what
it attractive?
To footballers.
Is it attractive?
I don't know. I'm just thinking about David with his.
No. You can't get him out of mind after those press ups and everything he's been doing.
You are watching it, aren't you?
Well, I saw 5 minutes. I did get quite captivated by him because he was doing some quite arduous looking press ups and making them look, and everybody literally had their jaws on the floor at the fabulousness
of it. Arlene liked it, I noticed. Yeah.
And some other guy that I don't know who he is was saying he had a man crush.
I like your lack of popular culture knowledge. It makes me warm to you.
Yes.
Anyway, that's where I went. Kevin Keegan's perm. That brings us to the end of today's episode of Postcast Midlife and the end of series 4, although there will be one Christmas special in early December. We will be back with series 5 in mid-January. So if you want to make sure you get to listen to that, then can you subscribe and make sure you download your episodes because they count on our listener numbers.
And please keep the conversation going with us on our Facebook group because we will be on there with you all and all our other members. If you want to join, we'd love you to come along. You just have to answer 3 questions. They're not very tricky, they're very simple.
Are they questions about Margot?
Yes. No, we put a line up and say, can you identify which cat is
which
Margot?
Cat did it?
And you only are allowed in if you spot Margot. No, we just ask you things like what you want to get out of the group, that kind of thing. Very easy. Okay. And that you follow the rules and all of that. And that will help us with our ideas for the next series as well, because we love to hear what you talk about.
You can stay in touch on the Facebook group and you can put any feedback there of topics you want us to discuss or any people you want us to interview. You can also follow us on Instagram and direct message us there if you want. And this is exciting, you can email us personally, and we do, Trish and I, check our emails every day. Me more so than you, I noticed, Trish, but anyway. And the address is hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com, and we will reply to everything if we can and take up any of your messages because we do really like hearing from you. So we will see you for series 5 after the Christmas special.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.